You're doing all these interviews.
All these interviews. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, welcome back to another Barnes Bullets podcast. Today we are floating around in the, what is this, the Gulf of Alaska, I believe?
Yeah.
I don't think it's the Gulf.
Yeah, it's close to the Gulf. I was looking at it on Onyx.
It's Pacific.
What? No, check this out,
dude. Pacific or Pacific?
Pacific.
The Pacific.
We're on Kodiak Island. Yeah, exactly. See,
Gulf of Alaska right there. Bam. Got it. Okay. I'm joined by Mitchell Cookson and Mr. Adam Grunda. How are you doing today, buddy?
Not sick yet. Had to kick everyone out of the cabin and go to their rooms. Hopefully everyone doesn't start puking.
Yeah. We are headed back from a pretty dang fun trip that we just embarked on about 6 days ago now, right? To hunt Sika blacktail and mountain goats for those residents in this group. And then some guys shot some Z-Ducks, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's shooting everything.
It's a pretty fun trip. There's a lot of stuff to kill on Kodiak.
Yeah.
As a resident, I can shoot goats. Everyone else was deer hunting. Everyone shot bucks.
Yeah.
I shot a really healthy, mature-bodied spike, the smallest of all the deer, but I had to get the party started. And then every day was horrible besides one day.
Yeah.
And torrential downpours and rain, and then hunted a little bit of ducks yesterday because it was pretty nasty.
Yeah.
Fighting storms.
I was thinking about it this morning as I was kind of like getting packed up. It was kind of funny that we killed, you know, we had six people that had tags on this trip, and we killed two bucks every time that we killed bucks. So it was pretty interesting because, like, we really didn't have, like you were saying, really, quote, great days to hunt other than one and a half, if you want to call it that. That one day started really nice, but then it got progressively worse throughout the day.
Yeah.
The crazy part is the day in was absolutely beautiful. Like, wind was calm, no rain, and then today it's maybe a little windy, but not really, and there's hardly any clouds out.
But they do say that once that we get out of these peninsulas here or bays that it's going to get pretty nasty on the ride back. So we're going to rock and roll the next 2 hours.
I can see the waves, though. They're pretty big.
Yeah.
They're starting to rock the boat pretty good.
Yeah, the
we'll
swells.
We'll see how long this podcast lasts.
Yeah,
Before somebody has to puke.
Yeah, we flew from Kodiak to a village and then took the boat out. It's a 67-foot boat. We went with a company called Kodiak Pursuit Charters.
Yeah.
And super awesome group of dudes. And, like, I was really impressed.
Yeah,
but they have to be up and back into a bay. They can't just anchor in the middle of the ocean
because you're
really susceptible to weather.
Yeah, let's kind of talk about how this all kind of came together. When I believe we kind of started talking about it, Hunt Expo time frame potentially.
Yeah, I think so. I had a buddy go. I'd always heard about the boat transport, and you can do Kodiak a couple different ways. You can go in a tent. You can rent some Forest Service cabins. I've done that before, but as you can imagine, the game around the cabin is super, super limited.
Yeah.
And then the boat thing's cool because you're basically on a floating cabin, and they take you. They don't guide you or outfit you or anything. They just take you on a big boat. They run you to shore on a skiff, and you say, hey, I want to hunt up here. And they drop you off, and they pick you up with a radio at dark, and it's super nice.
Yeah.
And I'd heard about this company from a buddy who had talked to him a bunch, and they were kind of a newer company, and I called a few references and everything checked out, and that's kind of how this came to fruition.
Yeah. And then we started talking about, like, what type of products that we're going to have for 2026 and how we could utilize those on this hunt. So unfortunately we cannot talk about those right now
until January.
But we were able to test some new products. I killed a deer with a new product. Mitchell killed a deer with a new product. You killed a deer with a new product.
Your gun, yeah.
Yeah, with my gun.
Yeah, some say a 338 rum with a 250 LRX is a little heavy for a tiny pygmy deer that's 80, 90 pounds.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we saw that deer, and I just grabbed your gun.
Yeah, so that worked out well. Carter killed a buck with new product as well. So that was super cool to kind of be able to use that in the field here. A month and a half before it's actually launched, 2 months before it's launched.
Yeah.
So all of Mitchell's hard work over the summertime came to fruition on this hunt.
Yeah, I'd say we had pretty dang good results.
Yeah.
Granted, we were shooting magnums, but I was planning on bringing a baby cartridge and decided against
talk you
it.
Out of that.
Once I started watching videos and seeing brown bears and stuff, I was like, you know, where I ended up shooting my deer would have been fine.
Right.
But just with brown bears and wind and everything else, it just, it's not that you have to kill them with the big magnum, but you got to buck the wind too.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of times it was blowing 20, 30 miles an hour. So
right.
Shooting a little bit lighter bullet, lower BC, slower velocity makes sense to go with the magnum.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
so there's your hint as to what some of these new products are.
Yeah, it's in the magnum family.
And we have a little guy too.
We do have a little guy there. We've got quite a few new products coming out, which will be, I think, will be exciting for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. It fills in a lot of the gaps we have. And
right.
Yeah, I think people will be jacked when they see what's coming out.
Absolutely. So, Adam Grunda, let's talk a little bit about your story, because this is the first time that you've been on our podcast. You told us earlier that you don't really even listen to our podcast. So
sorry, I got six kids. That's my fallback for everything. You might have six kids right now. You don't even know.
I know. I've got three kids right now. But, yeah, we never know how many will be
allegedly
at home when I get there. Mm-hmm. It is kind of nice talking about that. Like, I have been able to check in with the family this
boat's
whole entire
Starlink.
Time. Right. Yep. Yeah, because the boat has Starlink. So I've been able to FaceTime the family every single day. And that's kind of a really cool little added nicety.
I have not been able to do that.
Yeah, because that first day.
The first day was the hardest day I've ever hunted in the rain. And I think I got the iPhone 16 Pro Super Duper Max.
Not anymore.
Yeah, and Carter's like, isn't it waterproof to 6 meters? And I had it in the all-in case, and I was filming camera guy, Branson.
Yeah.
Got his buck, and we put him in front of the camera, and it just... It, like, sat into the all-in case and leached into the back of my phone. And so my phone was toast.
Yeah.
Like, there's no amount of rice that was going to save it. I thought about putting it on the stove, like, on a simmer. But it was smoked. So I got a new phone waiting in Kodiak. But, yeah, that was super cool for everyone, for emails and work and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's late in the year, too. I think we should mention, like, it's mid-November.
Right.
So, like, you don't have a lot of daytime. We had from 8:30 maybe to, like, 5.
Yeah.
A lot of time with darkness.
And it was
short days.
When we were going out, it was pretty dang dark.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. You could shoot, but trying to spot something more than a couple hundred yards is pretty tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, go back to the weather and everything else, right, with the overcast and all that, it makes it even more difficult, plus all the tall alders. You know, we can get deeper into the hunt and everything, but I would like to give a little background about Adam Grunda, like how you got to Alaska, like what you do now, like... You know, just give us a little brief backstory.
Yeah, I don't feel like my story's that crazy. I just always had a dream of, like, going to Alaska. I thought it was really cool. And I started as a fishing guide when I was 17. And then that kind of rolled into unloading float planes. And I just thought that was, like, the coolest thing ever. And I told my folks, I said, you know, in my next life, I want to do that. And they're like, well, you're 17. You can still, like, pursue a career. You know, it's not like your life's over right now.
Yeah.
And so I started learning to fly at a really young age. And I did it all really fast, from, like, private pilot's license through a flight instructor in 9 months. And then I started working with the right people to build a skill set to learn how to fly. Worked every summer in Alaska since I was 17. And then did a little time in Williston, North Dakota on the oil field. Didn't like that, but I liked the production level of work, like 100-hour weeks. And then 2017, I moved to Alaska full-time. I got a job for the feds. I was flying for them. Had a couple thousand hours and beavers and stuff. And so I was marketable and moved to Alaska, was married. And that's the hard part. Like, I moved to, like, a rural community, like King Salmon, Southwest Alaska. Is like, there's like 500 people that live there. Not a lot to do, but if you have an airplane, it's awesome. And so I bought a Super Cub. At that point in my life, it made sense to own my own airplane instead of just fly other people's. And this April, I think it'll be like 9 years.
Wow.
8 or 9. And I've accomplished a lot in 8 or 9 years. I feel like I'm kind of starting to, like, slow down where I don't have to just hunt my ass off all the time.
Yeah.
Because I'm, like, making up for lost time, if that makes sense.
Right.
And I worked for the feds for 5 years, flying for them out of King Salmon. And I didn't really like the government going in. And then the more that I worked for the government and then COVID hit, it was just, it was Pandora's box of opening. And I just, I had to leave. And finally my wife just told me, you need to quit because you're just miserable.
Yeah.
And I quit and I became what Cody Rich calls an entrepreneur. And I think that's just taking a bunch of stuff, putting it together and hoping it works. And
yeah.
So have a few rentals in real estate, a couple rental cars in King Salmon. We have a big brown bear viewing summer season. Make a very small amount of money in the hunting industry, but not a whole lot. And I run some retreats. Like I got one coming up in Costa Rica here
right.
a couple weeks. And it's kind of a bunch of stuff. My wife has a couple different businesses. She writes children's books. I got six kids all through foster care. I think that's a pretty good story about my life. Did I miss anything?
And Elite Hunt Club?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm part owner of a business called Elite Hunt Club where we buy... I mean, we thought about doing something for this boat, and we talked about it like an hour ago.
Yeah.
I'll buy either a package of six hunters for the boat like this for deer and mountain goats if they're eligible, or I'll buy a brown bear or a moose hunt, or we just did a brown bear moose combo, and I'll buy an outfitted hunt. We'll sell tickets, usually like 1,500 or 2,000 tickets, so it's limited, and kind of our slogan is you always know your odds, because a lot of raffles out there that I put in for, like, oh, I want to hunt a stone sheep, and I'll put in $500, but there's no cap.
Right.
So it's, like, unlimited number of how many tickets they'll buy or they'll sell to folks and stuff like that. So I also do that. Just, like, I think I counted one time, like, 9 or 10 revenue streams. I trap in the winter, sell some fur, pick up some moose sheds.
Well, and, I mean, I think that that's kind of a perfect way that for people that live in Alaska, I feel like almost everybody has to do a little bit of everything to be able to make do, because there's no way to have, I mean, yes, you could have a full-time job working at, you know, the local sporting goods store or something like that, or the grocery store or whatever that it is. But in a way, it's like, if you want to be able to experience Alaska to the fullest extent, you almost have to be able to do a little bit of everything. So then you can take time off when you want to go hunt, all that. So, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, everybody that I've talked to, between outfitters or guides or fishermen or whatever, right? It's almost like, depending on the season, depends on what they're doing that, you know, that time of year.
100%. Yeah. And I tell people to be able to hunt the most you possibly can, and you guys will get this, you got to have like three things. You got to have enough money with a job that lets you do that.
Yeah.
On the flip side, you have to have a job that lets you have time off. You can't make $500,000 a year and then never be able to take time off.
Right.
And then you got to have a wife that's like, sure, you can go. Not like, no, we're going to spend your vacation going to my in-laws or going to Disneyland. That's the hardest part.
Yeah.
They just get it. Mine grew up in a hunting family, so she's like, it's not a question.
Yeah.
And she just wants to go.
Right.
That's the coolest thing about my wife.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you need all three of those. And I think as an entrepreneur, you can really pick your schedule. And you don't have to be like, oh, let me see if I can get time off. You know,
right.
like we're talking about doing something in May, and it's like, oh, let me see if I can get time off. Like, you're probably going to be able to get time off.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Absolutely. I mean, obviously working within the hunting industry and, you know, working for barns, stuff like that. Luckily, Mitchell and I are pretty special in that regard.
I am very special in a different way.
Yes.
But
yeah. Yeah, I mean, at that time, right, it's just like making sure that the wife's cool with it and everything. Mitchell's done, what, 4 or 5 hunts this fall, give or take? I mean, with your general stuff and Utah and...
I've done quite a few this year. Really only one of my own. I did my buddy's deer hunt, buddy's mountain goat hunt, my elk hunt, Jess's elk hunt, my buddy's elk hunt.
Yeah.
We did general season muzzleloader. We struck out, and then... muzzleloader deer, and then this hunt. So that's 8.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
So quite a bit. I mean, and some of those are just like quick, like weekend trips, right?
Right.
Like versus full week long.
Just weekend. You just drive through the night, kill yourself and
kill an animal, and then kill yourself getting it out, and then back to work on Monday type of thing.
Yep.
Yeah. Those are rough. Weekend warrior.
Yeah. Right? That's why you got to do it. You got to make do with the time you have and drive through the night and not sleep, take naps during the day.
Right. That's cool. How are your goats doing? How many goats do you have now, Mitchell?
I have 8 goats.
See? He's beaten Grenda on how many kids he has.
We bought Dale a goat. It's currently in his garage. Mitchell was looking at Facebook Marketplace. I'm like, we should just buy that and just have it sitting in Dale's garage when he gets home. Happy birthday, Dale.
Little baby Jamal was only $100.
Jamal little, was the goat's
little
name.
Little pygmy goat.
Yeah.
It was only a pygmy?
Yeah, it wasn't even like goat. Yeah.
You could carry Dale's day pack and an Nalgene.
Oh, my God. Maybe just an Nalgene.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty small.
Jamal tries hard, though.
He does. He's a lover.
we talked about that up the mountain.
Fun fact, on the Facebook, on the
Goat Finders Facebook page that you use.
Yes. Fun fact is he likes goat food.
That's,
so.
Well, they should.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. All right. Well, let's, you guys want to talk about the hunt a little bit and like kind of give people some sneak peeks of. We did film this hunt. It will come out again in later January, I think, maybe even into February type of time frame, just because of product releases and all that. So make sure that we can have that out there. But we did film this hunt. It will be on the YouTube channel. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about the hunt. We flew up here to Kodiak, had to get an Airbnb. Grenda was very adamant that we had to be there here the 13th instead of the 14th. So Mitchell and I had to change flights just for us to have to sit in an Airbnb for a day and a half.
You guys could have went with us. We drove 4 hours to go shoot pistols. That was ridiculous.
Well, I'm just saying.
Usually it's a good idea to get in early because a lot of bags get lost. It's happened to us in Kodiak before. And I was trying to get out a day early with these guys. But, I mean, it's understandable. They were like, yeah, we might be able to do it, but it would be like us getting back today and them turning around in the next group. If the next group came in on the flight that's leaving and picking us up, that was the original plan, and, yeah, they kind of dropped the ball.
Just tight, yeah.
Yeah, too tight of turnaround, so we basically killed a day in Kodiak. And I'm sorry, Dale.
It's all good.
Hoping to move past this.
We'll try to. So, yeah, we ended up having to make the jump to the little small village, as you said. And then got on the boat, and it was a couple-hour boat ride, right, that afternoon.
You forgot to mention the chick that picked us up in the truck charges $100 for the one-mile drive each way. So $100 to drive you up there for a mile. Not to us, but the captain's, and $100 to drive you back.
Yeah.
I didn't even get a seat either. I sat on the tailgate.
So did I.
I was out in the cold.
That's extra if you want that.
The full experience.
But yeah, then we jump on these guys. These guys got on their boat. They had just lost a freshwater pump, just like a freshwater pump inside the boat. So they had to fix that real quick. And that weather was like perfect. And I was like, man, this is great. We could probably kill some today. But then we had to go down to a bay, and it was like 2 hours away. And by the time we got there, it was dark. And we saw goats on the way in, tons of deer on the way in.
Yep.
We were glassing from the boat. It was really exciting. And then we anchored up in a bay. And woke up to, it was really nice all night. And then right as we started to get first light, it's just starting to rain a little bit.
And a little bit became a lot of it.
Yeah, and it just rained it rained in sheets of rain all day. I went out and shot my deer first thing and then got the camera guy his deer. And that's when my phone broke.
That wasn't really the plan, though. Like, we seen one baby deer, I'm going to call it.
Are you talking about my deer?
Juvenile deer, yeah.
That's a fully mature. Juvenile deer. That spike was going backwards. It was actually going downhill.
Yeah, he was in regression.
Yeah. anyways, we seen the one deer and four guys go out in the pouring rain. I'm like, I'm not going to be the fifth guy to go shoot this baby deer.
You're not man enough.
I guess not. But they kill that, and then all of a sudden they're hiking up the mountain shooting another deer, and they got, and that was probably one of the biggest deer on the trip too.
And they could have killed another mature deer that was like right with that deer.
I almost shot that one with my pistol. I was really close. He was raking like 4 yards away. The doe was bedded like 6 yards away from the buck that was shot, and they're just like kind of like sheep hanging around. Like, what do I do?
Yeah.
And I almost got to shoot with my pistol, but then she kind of blew out, and he was like too far.
Yeah. Well. Next time.
Yeah.
Next time.
It was cool.
But yeah, it was a pretty efficient trip. You guys just set out for the one deer, came back with two, and one ended up being a freaking really, really nice buck. Deer.
Yeah, Branson's first ever big game animal.
Yeah, too. It was either an 8-point, a 4x4, or a 3-point with egg guards. We're not sure.
With a little kicker.
Yeah, it's got a kicker.
Yeah.
So drop time.
I think the purist called a 3-point with egg guards.
He might have just shot the new world record. We don't know.
100%, yeah. It's,
we haven't put a tape on it, so we can't confirm. Yeah.
It's a world record in my book. He was super happy. Got that on footage. Phone died. But probably the coolest part of the trip when I came back, and I was just like, I thought about it a little bit. When you come back and you actually take your clothes off, and I was like, my clothes are soaked.
Yeah.
They're just as wet as if they came out of the washing machine. But then I look to the dryer, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, dude. I can have these dry in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Came out, like, ready to go. And I'm like, it's still pouring, but I could go do another hunt this afternoon. It was too rain. It fogged in that afternoon, right, that first day. But I was like, this is insane. Like,
yeah.
That mental shift for me of just being on a boat and having a dryer was, I was like, this is worth it.
We kept joking around, this is the best tent that we've ever stayed in.
Yeah. Exactly.
To be able to come back to a nice, warm, hot meal that the guys, Cole and Bo, made for us.
Great food.
Yeah.
Like, I did not expect it to be this nice. I expected, like we were talking about, like, spaghetti every night, you know, and just like, oh, shepherd's pie third time this week.
Yeah.
You know, just.
Definitely was not that.
Dehydrated eggs. No, they had good stuff. Everything was different. And they had some, like, really good food.
Yeah, great food. You know, and kind of to even allude more to that, right, like we were talking about, you look at like coastal bear hunts or, you know, Sitka blacktail, right, like that's a lot of times very like entry level type of hunts for someone that wants to come to Alaska for the first time.
Oh yeah.
Because there is a lot of logistics that go into it. You know, going on a hunt like this where you're at least using a transporter, doing the boat thing, they've basically taken care of everything for you.
Yep. There's a ton that gets into getting to the village and stepping on the boat.
Right.
You know, like listening to Dale complain about extra night and Airbnb and everything. Yep. But like once you're here, I almost felt guided.
Yeah.
You know,
even though it's not
like, right. I didn't wash dishes. They're like, here, sometimes they put the plate in front of you. You didn't have to eat. It's like,
yes.
You had to bait your hook.
Yeah, he tried to bait my hook, and I'm like, I can bait my own hooks. I'm a grown-up, you know? Right. I'm not like the little kid holding the bluegill up at the pond.
Yeah,
that was Mitchell. Yeah, exactly.
I know.
He's like, I don't want you to get herring hands. I'm like, it's fine. I can get herring hands, you know?
Well, the great thing is you can turn around and just wash it off.
Yeah.
You have a sink, like, right here.
Yeah, we had a sink. We had two different bathrooms or heads, as they refer to them on the boat.
Yeah, you had a shower, which I don't think anybody used in this entire yeah. trip. But we did have a shower if we needed
we
to.
We had the option. Like,
right.
You can't use it every day, but.
Yeah.
Like,
I just used baby wipes. I figured I'd shower at the motel tonight. But right. I didn't take a shower. Did you guys?
No.
Did anyone wash clothes or just go outside?
No, yeah, just go outside.
Go outside and get
outside.
Rained on.
Yeah. I mean, I used the dryer. Like,
yeah.
I
use dryer every day. Yeah, the only downside we told them was they had one boot dryer, and we had, like, it had the glove attachment below, and so we have, like, one boot there and just kind of rotate through stuff. I said get a couple more boot dryers, and we could not have given them any higher praise. Like, it was awesome to do their stuff.
Super, super cool.
We didn't really get into the fishing too much just because we were super focused on hunting, and I think to get to good fishing grounds, we needed some better weather to, like, get outside to some more structure on the bottom. And
right.
We just didn't have that.
Yeah. But we still caught fish.
Yeah.
I mean, we caught some cod and soles.
Those black rock bass.
Yeah.
You got a halibut?
No, that was Carter.
Carter got a halibut.
Yeah, Carter caught one small halibut.
We tried a little bit. I mean, we were...
Yeah.
Jigging here and there, and it just picked up.
Yeah,
you catch a fish here and there, and it just.
I think what Adam's kind of getting at, right, is we didn't get to like the
offshore,
the primo type of fishing spots that they wanted to get to if you want to try to catch halibut or something like that, like regularly. So,
yeah, like they'll read a nautical chart, like we'll read Onyx, and they'll figure out the perfect topographical features underwater, just like we're looking, like we're a bench where an elk would bed down and stuff like that. They do the same thing. And we just didn't have the weather to get there. And they're like, hey, do you guys want to, like, possibly give up, like, a half day for fishing? Like, no, we want to tag out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then once we were tagged out, we had basically a day and a half of sitting on the boat.
Right, because the crappy weather.
Yeah.
But day two kind of came around pretty quick after getting those two deer back, getting them hung up. It rained basically the whole rest of the day pretty dang hard. Like you said, it fogged in. Day two came, and it started out pretty nice.
I had dry clothes.
Yeah, you had dry clothes. I don't even think it was raining when we got off the skiff. Mitchell and I went one way. Branson, Brandon, Carter, and Grendo went the other way because you had seen some mountain goats.
Yeah, as a resident, I'm able to kill goats here.
Yeah.
And they kind of wanted to move. Remember that? So they're like, hey, let's stay one more day.
Yeah.
And we kind of looked at the weather. The weather controls everything in Alaska, but especially Kodiak on a boat. And they're like, let's give it one more day. We had seen goats up on this bench the whole time, but it was way, way up. ended up only being like 1,700 feet above the ocean, but it looked way higher, as right. it it's always
steep.
Does.
Yeah,
it's just steep. Yeah. And like to just tell people, like in a nutshell, Kodiak just sucks. Like there's lots of game, but the brush, it's, I don't know what it is. It's like deer brush or whatever. It's like these sticks the size of your pinky. And like yeah. when it's vertical, you can't like move going up it. And yeah. so you try and stay on a bear trail, but then it's rainy and muddy and you're
going through alders
sliding.
That are 10 foot tall.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you're like, let me try the alders. And there's no brush in there, but then your gun's getting hung up on the alders and right. your pack. And then
you're high stepping everything to get around it.
Yeah. And then you go back yeah. to the brush and hate your life. So that's the hard part. But we finally got up and got close to some goats, but they weren't in a good spot. One walked through a good spot at 300 yards. I had the gun dialed. And I just brought my 338 for this because my theory is like, hey, if there's a bear, if there's an issue or something, goats can take a lot of lead. And it was either 7 PRC or 338 rum. And so I brought that 250 LRX. And you want to anchor a goat, especially. Right. You just went on a goat hunt. And it's like you want to not have them kick. You want to hit them in the shoulder and, like,
yeah, put them down where they're at.
Not let them move at all because they'll be on a little ledge sometimes. And these ones just weren't in a good spot. And then we're sitting there trying to make a plan. I'm like, I don't think it's going to work. We got, like, 2 more hours before we're going to start going back. And like, what are we going to do to get these goats? They're just at the very top, you know, and like you could shoot one and it'd probably roll the bottom. There wouldn't be much left. The guts would be smashed and they're not stout like a sheep where they're going to hold onto their horns. They're going to just have nubs yeah. at that point, you know,
yeah.
and just be cut up. And then I look above us and I was just actually calling the boat to give them an update. I'm like, hey, here's our plan, because we kind of keep in touch with the boat. And I saw a billy right above us, like 193 yards. He's like, shoot him, shoot him. I'm like, that is not a spot. He was skyline.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I was like, the bullet's probably not going to go through the goat and hit the boat behind him. Like, slim odds, but I'm like, I don't know what's behind the goat.
Right.
You know? And it's like, I think it's flat enough, but I'm not sure. And I don't just want to take the maybe. And then, like, a sheep would stare at you all day till it was dark. But that goat just, we had a glassing dart set up and everything. And he's kind of looked at us, and Carter moved around a little bit. He's kind of looked, and they don't have great eyesight. And then he just walked up the hill. And there was like 10 other goats up there where we were trying to shoot. And there was a billy up there rutting all these nannies. And I said, I bet he is going to go check those nannies, because he was pretty big. And I think it might have been the one that crossed before. And so I hustled up the hill, grabbed my gun that was set up to shoot the goats at 400.
Mm-hmm.
That was dialed to shoot the goats at 400. But in the panic, you don't think about that. I just looked at Brandon. I'm like, what do you think? He's like, we need to go. As soon as that goat goes behind that hill, we need to run straight up, kind of cut him off. And to run uphill to cut a goat off at side hilling is, like, stupid. But you yeah. have so much adrenaline at that point. You know,
right.
it's like you don't have pack to scrap the gun. And, like, you're using your gun as a walking stick in the snow and all kinds of stuff. And got up to 140. And then I was able to go in a little ravine. I got to, like, 80 yards. I was super close. And he was broadside, but he was kind of like, oh, I'm too close to those, whatever those are. I don't
yeah.
feel comfortable. So he starts doing the moderate speed uphill walk away, you know, that just, like, you know he's on to you.
Right.
And he gets broadside at like 90. I shoot and I don't hear the bullet hit. I'm like, how can I miss it 100 yards? I'm laying on top of a rock.
Yeah.
And I'm like huffing and puffing, but I'm like, the crosshairs are not moving more than like 4 inches. And so I rack it right away, and then he's going up to the left, and I shoot him like perfectly quartering. I hit him high again, and it hasn't registered in my mind that my gun's shooting high, because I'm dialed for a 400-yard shot and the goat's at 100.
Yeah.
And not that much high, but still, it matters. Goats aren't that big. They look big. And he kind of walked up into that shot like I was showing you on the footage and hit him really hard. And then I shot him a third time, and I basically hit the goat everywhere you could hit him without killing him. Like, just backstrap, and it just wasn't good. And sometimes stuff happens, and I don't like to sugarcoat stuff. And I was rushing the shot, and yeah, walked up there, had to finish him off one more time, and it was almost like 8 3/4 inch billy.
Yeah.
Super cool. He died like in a pretty, only a 45 degree slope instead of like
nice.
An 80 degree slope.
Yeah.
And so he didn't roll down the cliff. And in the video, I'm yelling at him like, stay, don't move, stay, you know, because they just have like these aftershocks and they keep wiggling. And yeah, we were really overzealous. We were going to come down the mountain in like an hour, and we were back 2 hours after dark.
Right. How long did it end up taking you to get down? About three hours.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, like, you keep your Onyx tracks on, but you don't, like, start your Onyx tracks. So you're like, ah, we're up the hill. It starts to look nasty. And then when you get to where they're off, you're like, man, I really wish I had them on. Because we got to one point, And Carter said it was the only time that he was actually, like, worried. We got to a spot, and I'm just looking. I'm falling to the ground. I'm like, oh, we shouldn't go anymore because it's, like, black abyss, and I was about to walk off a cliff. Oh. It wasn't bad. It was only a 20-footer, but, I mean, it would have hurt.
It probably would have hurt.
Yeah. I hit terminal velocity about 8 feet, as big as I am, you know. And then we just kind of side-hilled to the left a little bit. But you're just looking. You're following this brush. It's foggy. You got steam rolling off your body. You're hot. And I'm like, oh, we shouldn't go anymore. Carter's like, what's up? I'm like, pretty sure that's a cliff right there. And it's like, when you're coming from Kansas, and just not a thing, you know?
Jeez.
I was checking you guys out from the boat because you guys radioed in. I was looking. You could see your headlamps. And it was so thick, you could only see them, get glimpses of them,
sometimes.
And then they disappear. And you guys said you were on that saddle above the waterfalls. Like, oh, we'll be down in an hour. I check an hour later. I'm like, I think they're still there. They haven't moved. So, like, they're going slow.
Yeah. There was some issues. There were some times we took breaks and everything like that. And it was tough.
Yeah.
But it was really cool.
Yeah.
Me and Dale were just drinking hot chocolate on the boat, watching you guys.
Well, I knew you were there in spirit.
We'd made a big loop that day.
Yeah, what did you guys do?
That's when we went, you know, we went across the bay from where you guys went, kind of close to where Branson had killed his buck. But then we were like, okay, we're going to go in this back.
That northwest corner?
Yeah, kind of in the head of this bay, if you will. And we went back up in there, and I think we saw like 8 does. Did not see a single buck that day for whatever reason. I don't know. I mean, these deer are so small. Again, like, it's so brushy and everything. I think that we were just overlooking deer or,
you know,
like, we were also trying to, being that it was our first time on, you know, on Kodiak and, like, walking around and everything, I think we were just trying to cover country and just thinking that you're going to pick up deer faster instead of just, like, sitting down and just being like, okay, we're going to give this an hour to, like,
with
just glass it over. Yeah. And almost, you know, in a way, it's very similar to hunting coos deer, you know, like, that... It's just really thick country. They're small animals that you just almost have to pick up a flicker of an ear or something like that in the alders, and then all of a sudden you find a whole deer. I mean, at one point, I think I picked up a doe. She was literally just standing under a tree or alder or whatever that it was in the wide open, and I'm like, there's a deer right there. And Mitch was like, what are you talking about? And I basically, like, told him exactly where it was, and he looked over it multiple times. I went to go from my binos to the spotter, couldn't find her again, and she never moved a soul for like 15 minutes straight.
Yeah.
Just because it's like they blend in so well. Mm-hmm. So
we're in a brushy part of the island, I feel like, too. Right. If we had better weather, they said we could have got further around the south end there, I feel like.
And gotten to just.
Well, just like where Mitchell ended up killing later in the week. It was just more open, more grass, and I feel like. Yeah,
we were definitely in some thick stuff.
There was deer there, just super hard to see them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It was definitely lower density in that bay we were in, too.
Yeah, for sure.
But I don't know. It's tough. I think earlier in the year, I think you're right, you should kind of stay put and glass harder. But
right. You would think, like, right now they should have been rutting pretty well.
And that's why I wanted to, like, just, all right.
Just move, yeah.
You know, 20, 30 minutes, my guy, we got to go. Let's go check something else out. Let's go over this next knob and the next one.
Next knob. And every single knob takes you, like, even though you're only moving 150 yards, it takes you 20 minutes to get over there. It's kind of crazy just because it's so thick. But, yeah, we did that day. And then, you know, we ended up, obviously, you guys got back. And everybody's excited and soaking wet and gets to get dry and have a good meal and...
That was nice.
We ended up moving the next morning, and that's when, I think that's when everybody was on the verge of getting pretty sick when we moved to that next bay, right?
Yeah.
We were kind of fighting it, but it was weird because the swells were coming sideways on the boat. Like for the direction that we had to go, the swells were coming sideways, so it was rocking the boat left and right versus, you know, forward and backward type
of you're
thing.
Going north and the wind swells hitting you from the northwest or the west and so you're going straight, but you're rocking. Like, right now we have a tailwind, but the swell's not bad.
This is
pretty good. But I woke up in the bunk because
you can,
like,
see some whales out there.
The generator,
there are whales out there,
same place.
Yeah,
the generator has, like, that constant hum, but when they start the engines, it's like, okay, now it's loud. At 6 a.m. we're gonna move and try to be...
I got scared. We're like right by the engine, so it kicked on. I was like, what is happening? Like, what?
We're gonna blow.
We're gonna go down. And I was like, oh yeah,
Titanic.
We're moving.
Titanic.
Okay, we're good.
Hold on to me, Dale. And so we moved. The plan was to be to that bay at first light. Everyone had an empty stomach. They're making breakfast. The heater's on in the morning. It was like perfect storm of just like, And like you said, I've been on boats a lot. You grew up on boats.
Yeah.
I don't do well when people like start talking about getting sick. And they're like, oh, just try one of these ginger things, these gin things you suck on. And I'm just like, dude, no, that made me like
even
not
worse.
Good. I started feeling like my mouth like salivate. And it reminded me like college party days. And I was like, I need to go outside right now.
Yeah.
And went outside, held it together. And then like when we got kind of protected water, got some food, and usually food's the last thing you want, but it's like it actually helps settle your stomach because
right.
you just have just stomach acid and they're going crazy, and everyone got good, and then you went and shot a deer.
Yeah, we took off and we went with Brandon and Branson. Mitchell and I did.
I took the Flatlander.
Yeah, you took the Flatlander up one way, wanted to kind of walk this bench and everything, and then we went
cool,
to another
cool bay.
Yeah, super grassy.
Just looked better for deer, didn't it?
Yeah,
like when we got there, I'm like,
this
looks more like deer and bear country and no mountain goat country.
Yeah, so went up there. We decided that we were going to be SEAL Team 6 when we jumped off the skiff because Cole had told us, you know, this is going to have to be pretty quick because of this little beach that we were hitting was extremely rocky and
no delay.
Yeah, no delay at all.
And it was pretty deep where we stepped out. He couldn't get close enough, and then the waves were rolling in, so the waves they'd suck back, and you'd have like a 1-2 second window before the next wave crashed in, so that was your time. So you had to time it perfectly,
and that's hard to
do. There's still like 6 inches of water,
yeah,
so you kind of got to take a big step, time it, and then hustle out over.
And you're going off the front of the skiff, which is sitting up higher than the rest of the skiff, right? So like you actually have a 5 foot drop off essentially from the skiff, so you kind of like
And for the listeners, skiff's a Zodiac, so it's an inflatable boat with a hard bottom. It's like what, 13-14 feet long,
yeah, give or take.
But you got a bunch of dudes, you got a pack, you got a rifle, and like he said, you have to time it, so like when the water's just starting to come in and where it kind of peaks, you need to almost jump in the water, so it's just rushing out. But like you said, you have a 5 foot drop to like jump out with your pack and rifle and everything, and like
get a good footing on slick rocks.
How'd that work, Dale?
Well, so Mitchell decided that he was going to be the first person off the boat.
We let the camera guy out, which is always important. So he's going to get a cool shot. So we're all thinking we're going to be badasses rolling off this boat, you know. We're
look
all
cool.
Like, oh, yeah, we're so cool. And so I'm the first one off. You know, I'm acting tough. I'm, you know, leader of the team, obviously.
Obviously.
Pretty apparent, you know.
Yeah. Quarterback, right?
I'm calling the plays. I'm going off the boat. And I time it what I think is good. And the rocks were – they're big rocks, and they just, for whatever reason, they just, they're all stacked on each other. They give away.
Yeah.
It's like this big boulder field, and they're all slippery. They all move. So I took a spill off the front of the boat. I go down. The wave crashes over me. I'm soaking wet. My whole glove is filled. I didn't get it too bad because I was in full rain gear.
Yeah.
So I struggle. I get up. I fall again because then the rope in front somehow gets wrapped around my leg.
He was wrapped around the leg.
So I fall twice.
Oh, the bow line wrapped you up.
Yep.
Yeah.
After our skiff master told us, like, watch that bow line. It'll catch you. It's happened a lot of times. I'm like, oh, okay. I jump off. Well, so I fall twice. I'm soaked. Everyone's laughing at me. I'm like, whatever. Like, it's funny. He got on camera. If it wasn't on camera, I'd probably be pissed, but it was pretty funny.
Dale's laughing the hardest to you.
He is. So Dale's next.
I wasn't next. Brandon's next, which he's like 6 foot six, like former NFL defensive end guy.
He's high
he
stepping.
Just, yeah, he literally steps and like it's just like this little step for him.
Huge.
You know, and he just gets off and just walks off. And I'm like, okay, cool. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go this way or whatever. Cole's like trying to move the boat around. And I don't know what happened. I basically just like I just fell flat on my back, like when I fell,
you starfished.
Yeah, I just straight starfished. I still had one hand on the boat, like I'm just like holding. And about that time, like a wave just like crashes over me. So like, I literally got soaked from like, I mean, basically my chest down. And I could, as soon as I stood up, like I could just feel water running inside of my pants and everything else. It was.
So you're laying like your head's uphill.
Yep.
Your feet are in the ocean, and then a wave breaks over your face.
It broke like into my chest.
Awesome.
And just ran down. And I was like, well, this is a great start to the day. Because it was actually pretty cool.
It was a nice,
that morning.
Nice weather day, though.
Yeah, it was nice weather, but because of it being clear, it was actually colder.
Yeah.
So I end up getting up, and I'm just like, I cannot believe this happened.
Everyone's
but,
laughing.
Yeah, everybody's laughing
everyone's
at me
dying.
This time. And we're just like, yeah, are we going to freaking die because we're freezing to death? Obviously, you do have a nice boat to come back to if needed. And Cole immediately is like, hey, if you guys get, you know, too cold up there because you're wet, like, just call me. I'll come grab you or whatever.
Yeah, he was great.
And Brandon, like, just stays in the moment. And he's, like, looking around. He's like, all right, there's deer right here, right here. So he's trying to, like, get everybody's mind, like, back in the game, right? So we end up kind of, like, going up the beach a little bit. Cole takes off. And immediately, I think Brandon said something like, okay, there's some does right here. And he looks over and he's like, there's a good buck, like, right here above us. So I, you know, me being like extremely soaked from my chest down, I was like, I will shoot this buck and be done with it.
That's a great, that's a great deer for me right now.
Yeah. I was like, that is the perfect deer that I was looking for on this trip. So I get in position. Yeah. I get in position, get 300 yards, get prone. I think it was like 298 or whatever. He stands up and,
but it's like not prone. You're like pretty steep angle, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, well, I was prone, but I had my pack and then a Rockman pack, like stacked on top. So I could throw it out on a bipod. And even though, yes, I was prone, I was like still shooting up at probably a 35 degree angle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Up at
the deer.
Like
you're shooting at the deer on the beach.
No, flat. Absolutely not. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was 200 yards off the beach, literally straight uphill.
Less brush, but still wicked steep.
Yeah, wicked steep. So anyway, I, you know, dial my scope or whatever, like, you know, get my range, dial the scope, shoot the buck, and just, like, absolutely smack him, like, shoot him in the shoulder, drop him in his tracks. But where the goat didn't do this, the deer decided to play the part of a goat. I think he had identified as a mountain goat, actually.
Shot him with the special super secret sauce ammo.
Yeah, the special super secret sauce ammo. Actually, unfortunately, it wasn't the first deer that got killed with that since you had shot one, but it's okay. I wanted to be the first guy, but I let my buddy do it first. So anyway, did get to shoot him, but he identifies as a goat and decides to do one of those last hurrah, like, kicks
twitch
off the mountain. And
Brandon was the only one that noticed. We were all high-fiving and celebrating. He's like, whoa, 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 watch it. And all of a sudden it disappears, which is really important because if we didn't notice, we would have hiked up there, what, 600-700 feet
right
for nothing.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So he goes back and he, like, kind of falls into this crevice and literally rolls that complete 200-plus yards probably down the mountain, down the hill, and lands on the beach. So
picked up some speed.
Picked up a lot of speed, but with that also, you know, kind of started blowing up inside because of doing multiple flips and everything else. But anyway, yeah, got to shoot a really nice buck. I mean, you know, it's a whatever, 3x4, 2x3. I don't know however you want to call
a
5-point. Well, it would have been more than that because it would have been a 7-point.
Call 7-point.
You know, if we're talking whitetail world. But, you know, 3x4 buck. And, yeah, just cool buck. I mean, again, these things aren't very big. It's like this was, well, for – you've been to Kodiak before. You've shot Sika Blacktail before. But I think for everybody else, it was their first. So I don't think everybody was going to be very picky. And I knew I wasn't going to be. I mean –
the other really important thing you got to think about, too, is we're watching the forecast.
Right.
And so it rained like crazy the second day.
Yep.
And the following day from where we were hunting, we were looking at the forecast. It was supposed to rain more. It
right.
was like 99% chance.
And the wind was supposed to kick up a lot.
And then the next day didn't look a whole lot better. So we're like, we kind of got to get some shit done today.
Yeah. We knew that we had like a very short weather window, right? I mean, and when you come to Alaska, I think that's kind of the thing, right? Is that you know, I've been joking around all year because now this is my fourth hunt that I've done up here this season. It's like you have to make hay when the sun shines, right? Because you only get like certain days that it's going to be like super sunny and really nice or whatever. I mean, yeah, you can hunt during the sucky times, but if you can kill on the days that like you know are kill days, like you just get it done. So.
And yeah, this boat allows you to do that because like other days we wouldn't have got out of the boat.
Right.
In normal 100%. Days, like, if you're on a goat hunt and it starts raining like that, you don't leave the tent.
Yeah.
Because everything will be soaked and you'll be tapping.
Right. Or a moose hunt or sheep hunt or whatever. Right?
Yeah.
For sure.
At least this one, you can go out, be miserable for 5-6 hours, come back and have this thing called a dryer and some warm soup and like reset.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Yeah.
And the weather isn't, it's cold out.
Yeah.
It's barely above freezing, yeah, but as long as you 45 degrees. Keep moving, even if you're wet, you're going to be all right. If you're wet and you stop moving, it's going to be an issue, but
right,
you can get wet and you can keep moving, you'll be all right. Yep. It just
don't
sucks.
Stop.
Yeah.
And you're wet and it's horrible.
For
but
sure.
You won't die.
Yep. So I end up going down there, and as we're doing that, I go check, find the buck that he's on the beach. I come back and I tell these guys that I'd found him or whatever, and I'll go ahead and start taking care of him. And they've already, glassed up, two or three more bucks, further up the drainage. Mm-hmm. So they're like, well, we're just going to take off after that. So that's when Mitchell and Brandon and Branson took off that way. I went and took care of my buck and called Cole for a pickup.
Yeah. Yeah, we seen, it was 5 or 6 bucks. They were all over the place. It was a really great area because it was enough grass. You could glass them and see, and they were rutting does and running around. But then they also had the thick alders to go bed in. So it was a really good area for us, and we kind of picked through. I was going to shoot the first one, then we seen another one. It's a little bit bigger, and all right, we should check all these out before we go make a play. So
could you see them in the alders?
Not really.
Even without leaves?
Yeah.
They're so small.
You could, if you could catch them in the open and then go into the alders, you could track them through sometimes. But
yeah,
just glassing the alders, no way.
Gotcha.
But anyways, we finally found one we liked, went after it. I think it was about 900 yards where we're at. And then I glassed a knoll, and that was 350. So if I could get to that knoll, it'd be in range.
Yeah.
So we get up there, hike through the thick alders, get up, get in range. The buck starts kind of getting nervous. He's looking at us, and I get dialed. I'm set up. We're on him. But he bedded down, so I couldn't shoot. He gets up. He's walking directly away, and then he gets behind brush, and then the camera's not on him, and then he's walking away again. And I never felt comfortable with the shot. There was just never a good, clean shot. And the last thing I want to do is go track a wounded deer up in there, because then I'm wasting the other guy's time,
yep,
my time. We're in grizzly country. We don't have,
you know, brown bear country.
Same thing.
Is it, though?
Mm. But, yeah, I didn't want to shoot. So he walked over the hill and was like, okay, well, let's go find another one. And so we didn't have to go that far. We were seeing other bucks. They were further off. But we kind of get to another point where we could see another portion of the drainage and seeing a buck. We didn't think it was that big, but I was like, let's get closer. Let's get an eye on him. We'll get the spotting scope. So we get to about 300 yards and
yeah,
look at him. I was like, okay, yeah, that's a shooter.
Yeah.
He wasn't with any does. He must have been running around checking them, but he was alone, and we got set up and made a good shot about 315 yards.
Nice.
Quartering away, so I hit him a little bit back behind the ribs and then exited through the shoulder, and he still took off another 50 yards, but he was a dead deer running. We got pretty cool footage of it. He ran, tumbled, and then did a backflip. And
yeah, started doing gymnastics over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he didn't go far.
Yeah.
So we got over him, cut him up. We just got him out. We didn't have to quarter him. It's a nice having NFL guys with you. He put the whole deer on his Rockman pack.
Yeah.
And he carried it out for me. He even gutted it for me, too. I didn't gut it out.
Wow.
He gutted my deer and then packed it out.
So I think he did that for me, too. Yeah, hell of a guy.
So even when you don't have your pack goats, you still have a pack goat.
Yeah, exactly. And he's kind of cooler than the goats.
He eats a little more than the goats, but yeah.
That's true. That's the downfall. You gotta keep him fed. But,
didn't snuggle as much as your goats do, though.
No, he wasn't about the snuggling.
Yeah. If you can bring an NFL defensive end player with you.
Do it.
That's 6'6" or 6'9", I don't know, gigantic. And will carry deer out whole. I highly recommend that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's always helpful.
That was kind of a cheat code for us because that was able to expedite things. And then we were deer hunting and we saw a bunch of does, saw some bucks way high, higher than the goats were, but they were in deer country. Just it would have taken forever to get to them. And I'm like, Carter, do you really want to go all the way up there? Because I didn't want to. Nah, you know, they're not that big. They're like 2-point eye guards. And I'm like looking down the beach. I'm like, kind of looks like a harlequin down there. And the sponge goes, give me the spotter. Really looks. He's like, we should just go for ducks. I've never seen someone so excited over a bird. But he came up here for the whole experience. And the Harlequin was like his bird, and we went out that afternoon and set up on this point, and it was just, it was lights out.
Yeah,
it,
I mean, for cool. for Carter, right, like this is his first time in Alaska. I mean, it's Mitchell's first time as well, but like for Carter, right, as a waterfowler growing up in Kansas and the Midwest and everything, like
the Harlequin's like the holy grail.
Yeah, 100%. Really pretty, but I was just also thinking, like, he got to experience so much in Alaska in such a short amount of time. Like, to do deer hunting, duck hunting, but then also, like, be on a mountain goat kill. Like, you got to do so many things. Like, that's really, really cool.
So many activities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's really cool. He really impressed me, too. He did good, and I was, you know, I was a little worried because, like, you're cold, wet, and miserable. Even a lot of guys can't just do it even for a day,
right.
you know, and even coming back to the boat. And he didn't complain, whine, or whimper, and he was right there.
He whimpered.
He did whimper.
He didn't complain. He didn't whimper.
He was like, hey, he whimpered a little bit. He did really good, man. I was really impressed by that guy.
Yeah.
He was just happy to be there and just like, you know, it's still mesmerizing me, and I live here. But just to be like, man, look at these mountains, and there's goats, and there's deer. Never saw a single bear. I think bears are getting pretty sleepy. It's mid-November. Even though their season is still open right now, we just didn't see a whole lot.
Right.
And
yeah, I don't feel like we ever saw a single bear track this entire time.
We smashed ducks, tried to do a little fishing, caught a couple rock bass. Those Irish lords. You caught a few of those, didn't you? The red, like...
Dragon-looking fish.
Yeah, like a little mini dragon.
I didn't like those.
Yeah.
They scared me.
Goofy-looking. And then, yeah, we had to get into a bay because another storm. Was coming. So we went back to the first bay we hunted. It was pretty protected. And then it was like we had one morning left. And it was like, this is your last chance.
And Cole and them were pretty adamant. Like, hey, look, you can only hunt till noon because you guys need to be back on the boat because it's about to get nasty.
Yeah, and it got nasty. But, yeah, we were able to go up. And Carter had a tag. Brandon had a tag. And we're on this deer. And we were close, and then it walked to this ridge, and so we went up to the top of the ridge where we saw the deer, and then the deer moved up to, like, borderline goat country. They're, like, right at the base of the cliffs where you, like, can't go up anymore. And it was a team effort. I was filming. You were ranging, Mitch. And Carter was the first shooter, and I'm tracking this deer through the spotter and through the alders and trying to, like, describe where he was.
It was hard. We were back and forth for 20, 30 minutes just trying to find it.
Yeah.
I was like, do you see that rock?
And then someone would see it, and then the shooter would have to see it. Everyone would have to line up, and finally I got to a spot, and I'm like, okay, do you see that rock? Go down the triangle rock below it, and then go run one rock width to the left, and there's like a horizontal piece. That's his back, and then you can start making out pieces.
Yeah.
Like, there's the antlers, dark face. You can see the throat patch, and Carter shot him like 400-ish or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing is that buck led us to what I thought was a doe, and... Brandon's like, no, that's got a throat patch, got to be a buck. But I'm just like, I'm just trying to focus on the first deer here because I can't take my eyes off that one. He shoots that one, rolls it with super duper secret ammo, and then look above, and that thing had kind of taken a step out, like, hey, what's going on? We're all shooting suppressed, so it's not like you blow out the whole canyon.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, that's a buck. And I'm like, Brandon, come over. And he's like, see, told you so. And I'm like, that's a pretty good buck.
Yeah.
And I looked at him like, you need to go kill that buck right now. So then he lays down and he shoots that deer. And so then we had, like you said, feast or famine.
Yeah.
It was like 2-2-2.
Yeah.
So he's shooting. He was the only one that didn't shoot a new product.
Can we talk about what bullets he shoot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was shooting the 6.5 PRC
127.
With the 127 grain. And he did a Texas heart shot. That was the only shot we had. And with Barnes bullet, you can do that. So it went through the butt. And it, which is really impressive. It went through the butt all the way up through the body, and we were searching for the bullet.
Nicked a rib.
It hit the rib on the way front and cracked the rib in half. It didn't exit, but it went the full length of the deer and had enough energy to smack that rib.
Like one of the forward ribs, too.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The thick ones.
And crack it.
Yeah.
So that's why you shoot Barnes.
All right. Yep.
Yeah.
That's why you shoot.
Even on these little deer, you can do that.
After seeing that, and Branson shot his deer with that and just sacked him for the first big game animal ever, like, that was probably the best combo I'd see. That 6.5 PRC or the 127 LRX, that was like, that's a really good combo. If you're just deer hunting, you know, maybe you run into a brown bear.
I mean, these blacktails are, you know, they're stocky, though, right? Like, I mean, even though they might not be that big, like, they're not like a normal whitetail, I would say, like, you know, southeast type of whitetail. I mean, these things are pretty damn stocky and tough animals, right? They live in this harsh conditions, everything else. So, I mean, you know, you say that, like, yes, they are, like, shooting, quote, little deer. It's like, but they're still pretty damn hardy, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, we dropped a few, but, like, mine, quartering away, hit it in the opposite shoulder, it still ran 50 yards.
Right.
I mean, it was a dead deer running, but.
Yeah, 100%.
To take that bullet, yeah, with the Magnum.
Right.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But that 127 grain, I've said it before, that's my favorite bullet.
Yeah.
I've killed a lot of elk with it. At a higher velocity, 6.5 PRC is moving. But I was shooting the 6.5 300, and I've killed 5 or 6 elk with it. And 127 is enough. I've only recovered one bullet, and that was at 600 yards.
Really? Because it's blown through.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I've since upgraded to the 7 PRC. I'm kind of on Adam's side. Shoot bigger bullets.
Yep.
Because why not?
Right. For sure.
But that's a mean bullet.
Yep. It's pretty sweet. Well, it looks like we're
almost to town.
Almost back to town now, which is kind of nice.
The village.
And then we got to jump on a little charter over to the main portion of the island and start getting gear together to fly home tomorrow.
I don't like going back because then it's like, I have to do stuff, you know?
What, when you fly home?
No, this. Like, oh. I have to get my meat. I have to take it to the smokehouse. We had to check in a motel. It's like, here, they just have it all done. You know? I'm kind of in lazy mode. It's like, I got to, like, all the logistics start again. We got to find a, you know, get his truck, maybe rent a second truck, and then, like, call the airport shuttle, like, all the logistics just to get all your stuff from back. Here back. That's the challenging part of Alaska. That's the cool thing about the boat, like, to kind of bring it back. Like, they handle all that stuff.
Yeah.
Felt like once you got on the boat, all your worries just went away.
Yeah.
It was just like,
you just worry what the weather is going to be. But I mean, you have to go with dudes that are like, you can't be type A and just dialed in. Like, we're going to go to this bay tomorrow. It's like, I got
just
on the
boat. Go with the flow.
I got on the boat and asked captains. I said, hey, because they can't guide you. And so you have to know, like, hey, these are the places you want to go. We had a couple pens, dropped some buddies down here. Like, what does the weather look like? And where are you able, what bays are you able to go? And then we'll tell you where in each bay we want to hunt. But, yeah, you just got to be able to kind of roll with the punches.
Yep, for sure.
Pretty much any Alaska hunt, you just got to roll with the punches, and it's all part of the adventure.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your time on this podcast. I look forward to doing more podcasts, potentially more hunts. We'll see if we renew. But
saying there's a chance. I might listen to this one. Mitchell talked a lot. He talked more in this whole podcast
than he has in all of
like
the podcast.
The whole week. Yeah.
Yeah. So Mitchell's slowly becoming a better podcast co-host, if you will.
I'm an expert.
An expert. You're something for sure.
Expert blacktail hunter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you guys want to check out cool Sitka blacktail hunting, maybe black bear hunting or something like that, go check out Kodiak Pursuit Charters. You can find them on Instagram. They also have a website as well. But, yeah, I hope that you guys enjoyed this podcast and be looking for new products to be coming here soon. Talk soon.